You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back into the Lions 24/7 podcast. I am Tyler Donahue. He is Sean Fitz. It's another post-game edition of our podcast. Just letting you know ahead of time, for many of you, you may just find us on your podcast, but many lately have been subscribing to our YouTube channel. We appreciate that. This particular episode will not be up on the YouTube channel. Just some issues here, technical difficulties on our end. Look for more on the YouTube channel coming up next game week, but let's get back to it. From an audio standpoint, we'll give you the best we got. And some people are calling for it again, a therapy session tonight, Sean. I don't know how well we'll be able to deliver on that, but we've parsed through some numbers. We have some thoughts. At the end of the day, it's going to be a 21-17 loss we're talking about for the Nittany Lions. A late touchdown by Eric All, tight end for Michigan, 47 yards on touch to the end zone. Puts the Wolverines ahead late after Penn State rallied a bit early in the fourth quarter. Four out of the last five games now, defeats for Penn State since a 5-0 start.
Not exactly how you, exactly how I drew it up in terms of score prediction. I had Michigan winning 21-17 as it finished. Not too happy about that. As you pointed out on Twitter the other night, we'd rather both be wrong about this one. But unfortunately, Michigan hit the big play when it counted there at the end. Penn State put themselves in a position to win this game, forced the fumble, kicked the field goal, went up 3 points. But you can look and you can shoot holes all through this game. I mean, this was one you're coming away. And if you're a Penn State fan watching this game, it's an all too familiar feeling. You're coming away thinking could have been so much more and just ended up falling flat once again. James Franklin said afterward, those key plays, those 4 to 6 plays per game, Penn State is just not getting. And he's really right about that one.
Yeah, this was another matchup. And look, when you lose four games now by a total of 18 points, you're damn right you're going to be able to find a few plays every game that make you really lose sleep at night if you're James Franklin and if you're this Penn State coaching staff and certainly the players. And by the way, Jaquan Brisker after this matchup saying they still feel like they can beat any team in the country on any given Saturday. Kevon Lee says the goal is still to finish this season playing like the best college football program in America. And yet you say, hey, you've got these four losses and it's really hard for them to reconcile with right now because it has been so swift and it hasn't been like they've gone out there and gotten rolled up over the course of a game. Each time, like you said, it's hinged on a few things. There were some early, incredibly aggressive special teams calls that we're going to talk about in just a moment. Ultimately, though, there were a couple factors that led each of us, I think, at the end of the day to pick Michigan to win by narrow margins, albeit was the fact that Michigan had a ground game that it could lean on when it needed to, whether it was trying to put away a game late or take some heat off its quarterback. That happened for them over the course of this matchup. The other is the fact that off the edge particularly, but really over the course of this game, that defensive front for Michigan, what a talented bunch, and they took Penn State's lunch money in a lot of ways this afternoon at Beaver Stadium.
7 sacks for the Wolverines, most of them coming with through Aiden Hutchinson and David Ajabo, who gave Penn State's tackles more than they can handle all day, specifically Caden Wallace. You see why we rank Caden Wallace as a guard at 24/7 Sports, just continues to struggle with speed off the edge, especially Ojabo. 5 sacks in the first half, couple in the second half, and those were on Sean Clifford in the second half. But still, I mean, that's a product of the scenario that he's in, sitting there. You know, he got beat up today, just flat out. Took some shots. Some of them he put himself in the way of, and the other ones really couldn't do much about it. You kind of feel for him in terms of taking those hits, but he went back out there, got the lead back for Penn State, wasn't able to cash in. It's just it's just frustrating, man. You're watching this team, and if you're a couple plays here, a couple plays there away from being 8-1 or whatever it might be right now, that's fine. But if you just repeatedly find yourself in this situation over and over and over again, and you can't turn that corner, maybe you're not as close as you think you are.
there was a moment in time this fall, not that long ago, and on this very podcast, where you could feel like you could compartmentalize their struggles and what they were dealing with, because so much of it was about Sean Clifford's health. And even after that game against Illinois, just that ultimate clunker, you say, okay, well, those two games, those two outcomes, you can attribute to a really dire situation at quarterback. But now you get through the last couple of games and you fought hard at Ohio State, but you were in a dogfight, of course, at Maryland, a tie game in the fourth quarter. And then you lose a narrow one here against Michigan. And you start to say, oh, this is a one loss team without, if that injury doesn't happen, it starts to say, well, maybe even if that injury happens, there's still maybe a three loss team over the course of the game. And you start to just, again, continue to recalibrate where you were in September and October, because those same issues, they were issues. We were saying these are things that could trip up Penn State. They did trip up Penn State, and now they're coming to define this entire season for Penn State. That is where it's at. The things that were problematic, and we were talking about potential roadblocks for a 5-0 team, they are now that's the label. I mean, these are the kind of things that are being applied to the 2021 team that when we look back 2, 3, 4 years down the road, you say, what do you remember about 2021? You'll remember that they couldn't run the football. And that's probably the first thing you'll mention. And then you get to all the other stuff. But that's really where we're at with the conversation. And you've got two games, and James Franklin coming out of this one saying they really want to work on things on the ground game. They want to take that next step. But you got two games left. You got Rutgers coming in. You finish on the road against Michigan State. And then you've got a bowl game that's going to carry a very little buzz compared to where Penn State thought they might be in the postseason. So you're running out of time to correct things. And right now, you're really starting to venture into a pivot point where you feel like you've got a good idea of who's hit their ceiling on the roster, and you want to start to peel back the curtain a bit on some other guys. And oh, by the way, a lot of evaluation to do right now for this coaching staff.
A lot of evaluation to do on this coaching staff. I mean,
this is a lot to talk about there in the next few weeks.
Well, that's the thing you keep going back to is you mentioned the run game, and that's great. And James Franklin, like three answers in the post game, went right back to the run game. And that's a legitimate concern. It has been, and they need to do better, even though they did okay today. They got some chunks on the ground, which they're not really used to getting. But you just look and just spread this all over the roster, spread it all over the building, coaching calls, running a fake field goal to your punter slash kicker, who is a really athletic guy, but you're asking a lot of chips to fall in place against a pretty good defense in their own right for that to happen. Then you get to certain spots where you have players that have made plays in the past. I mean, Clifford missing Theo Johnson, just the little things here, missing Theo Johnson by a couple of feet. Theo can't get his body turned around and get into the end zone. And then all of a sudden you're doing a fake field goal, or trying to hit John Lovett across the middle, and Lovett had a terrible game today with drops and things like that. But maybe you give him a chance to score a touchdown there. It's just these little things. And I tweeted this before halftime, just these key plays that just keep popping up. Brandon Smith on a third down. Brandon Smith is potentially an incredible linebacker. And then every week seems to go out and try and lay a shoulder into somebody and be more physical than them, and that guy bounces off and gets eight more
pinball
yards.
He has this tendency where he becomes a pinball out there, and you're like, you think he's going to be a battering ram in a spot, and then all of a sudden he's a pinball, and you're just wondering where's the disconnect. And you're right, it pops up over and over and over. And we're talking about a Buckus Award semifinals, the guy that with all the talent being projected to maybe be a top tier draft prospect. But here, what we've seen at Penn State, and we've watched every game of his career, it just has not come to it hasn't been the complete product. And this is kind of the consistent Achilles heel of Brandon Smith out in space, and all of a sudden bouncing off a guy and not wrapping up.
And you're not searching for perfection here. I mean, this is college football. It's beautifully imperfect, to be honest with you. And it's something where if you give up a touchdown or some points or something like that, that's okay. That happens. I mean, this defense has been on point for most of the year, and then they go up and they give away a play at the end of the game, which was a really, really nice call by Michigan. But it's tough because you're just so close to making some of these in-between plays that set up the deciding ones. And that's really where you find yourself behind the eight ball there. And Michigan probably shouldn't have scored in the first half, but you find yourself making these little plays where you put yourself in worse position. Then all of a sudden your back's against the wall and you give up a touchdown there. So that, I think that's the most frustrating part from the player standpoint. And then you get to the end of the game And understand you don't have Jahan Dotson. You wouldn't have had Jahan Dotson. I mentioned this on the site and on Twitter as well. Even if you call a timeout, I know that's a rule that's been in the past. Maybe it changed in college football. Maybe it was just a pro rule. I don't know. I didn't look at it too closely, but you can't call a timeout and bring him back onto the field according to the NCAA football rules. But you find yourself throwing to Cam Sullivan Brown twice, Malik Mega once. Dotson's not in there. That's really, really what's hard to swallow here, is because you've got these guys that have been so productive for you, Theo, in a secondary role, Theo Johnson and Parker Washington, and you're going down the field to Cam Sullivan Brown, who's got four catches all year. I mean, that's some of the stuff that is really, really hard to process if you're a Penn State fan, putting yourself in the position to make plays for some guys and other times just not giving yourself a chance.
And those are not like safety net throws by any stretch of the imagination to Cam Sullivan Brown. And that's kind of been his wheelhouse at Penn State, is kind of being a short to intermediate guy on receptions. And yet it was more like, you know, 50-50 contested ball situations way downfield when you have 2 yards to pick up. And you mentioned this on that final possession for Penn State, Malik Mega, his second career catch, set them up with a 3rd-and-2, opting not to get the ground game involved. And I thought that was even more notable, that not just opting to not get the ground game involved with Jahan Dotson sideline in a 4th-and-2. I know they don't have trust in the short yardage, and that's what James Franklin said. But, you know, having the timeouts in their back pocket there, the way their defense had played for much of the day, that was also a surprise to me, because I they gave the ball back to Michigan, and maybe Hassan Haskins would have done it regardless, because he became that kind of bowling ball with knives attached to him as the game wore on. And that's the kind of running back as he is, 36 touches, 205 yards. I think he was right around there, but it was a battle of attrition. And ultimately he was able to put this one away late, which was Penn State's Achilles heel in a lot of situations this year. And again, today. But they were able to hand the ball off to him, ice the game. And I think before we go too far down the road talking defense, I'm just going to tell you, look at these games that they've lost. You gave up 23 points at Iowa. You gave up 10 points in regulation against Illinois. You gave up 33 against Ohio State. Now, 33 sounds like a lot of points to a lot of people, but that's, go check the Ohio State matchups over the course of this year. 33 points is not a lot for them. And then 21 for Michigan. This ain't on the defense.
No, and they've had their moments, and I think that's really what it comes down to when you're evaluating this defense. I mean, I was just looking on Twitter, and I don't know why I get any observations or anything from Twitter, and someone's like, this defense sucks. I'm like, no, if that's your expectation, just kind of stop watching football. I mean, college defenses are going to give up points, they're going to give up yards and things like that. They've been in position to take it. And I think the qualm that you have with the defense today is they got their turnover. They got their big splash play. Arnold Ebiketie, who was fantastic today, came around with a strip sack. Tangelo falls on it, puts you in prime position to score a touchdown, use some clock, do whatever. Basically go 3 and out, have to kick a field goal. Points are points. Points are gold in this scenario. But at the same time, you pretty much got yourself in position, and then you come out and you give up the big play. I think that's the frustrating part for this defense is they did their job. They got them where they needed to be. And the offense once again does not take complete control of things. And then you turn it back and you say, the offense, well, they got them some points. That's great. Now it's time for the defense to take care of their thing. And, you know, you couldn't roll with it. And that was frustrating. Like I said, really good play call to Michigan was just going to drag Penn State across the middle to death. And that's really what popped up at the end there. Kalen King's trailing Eric All ran into one of his own players. I think it was Daquan Hardy or something like that.
Hardy. It looked like, to me, like Hardy was, and by the way, holy crud, some of the officials today, I think, I don't know if it's the same one, but they were all over the field. Yeah. We don't want to get fined here. From what I saw here, it looked like Hardy was actually trying to avoid an official, and that led to kind of him, the trajectory of those two colliding. I'll have to take another look, but that's what it looked like to me. And one fell swoop, and all of a sudden it frees all, and he goes all the way. Brisker talking about this one, very careful. Basically, he called it a pick play. And if you watch it, Penn State picked their own player.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you should have just ran over the ref. Everybody else did all day.
Right.
These guys were in the line of fire quite a bit. But yeah, there was a lot of those natural picks, if you will. Penn State tried to run a few of them as well, weren't as successful as Michigan. So, but yeah, you put yourself in that position and the big play comes. It's kind of just exactly what happened against Iowa there at the end. You got the big pass play and, you know, you weren't able to strike back in the end there. So, but it's just, you know, you could talk about, is it players? Is it execution, personnel, whatever? I mean, it's all going to fall back on James Franklin, isn't it? I mean, that's really what he's there for. That's what he makes the money for. And, you know, at the end of the day, four losses in the last five games. I mean, you've got plenty of questions about where that one stands right now, because as I said, you're not as close as you think you are if you keep ending up in this situation and not getting over the hump.
Yeah, and you know, it was brought up during the post-game press conference that Penn State carries that 10-9 record, and Franklin and company did a really good job of convincing a lot of people that 0-5 was going to need to be put in its own box and buried in the backyard and really should not be attributed to what they want to be about here with the program. Now, they are losing games in a much different fashion this year than they did last year when they were getting just blown out. But win-loss record, it is what it is, 10-9. And then if you go back to when they started 8-0, went to Minnesota, were number four in that opening college football playoff rankings, 13-11 since that point. So that's not good when it starts to stack up and you're right around that 500 mark and, you know, streakiness and, you know, a 5-0 streak is followed by this and the 0-5 is followed by another streak. So yeah, it's really confusing to figure out where James Franklin is right now in terms of his, how kind of himself as a commodity across college football, because we were talking about this in such a different light in the first week of October about, can Penn State do everything it can possibly could to make sure that they retain his services? And now the conversation is, will there be someone trying to blow James Franklin away with an offer? And if not, what are the conversations that need to take place between him and the Penn State administration about the 10-9 record in the last couple of years, then the 13-11 record over the past 24 games, and how is he going to have to make some concessions on what he's going to do with his staff and maybe some guy that he feels very loyal to and going to have to look himself in the mirror and reevaluate that. Now that's a conversation for 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks down the road, really in reality, but those are the kind of conversations this is trending toward. And I don't think either of us saw that kind of outcome when we were talking about this program, you know, 5-0 or even at 5-2, to be honest with you.
Yeah, tough conversations. And your most explosive player, and James Franklin singled him out after the game, Jahan Dotson, your most explosive player is going to the NFL after this year. So what do you do to revamp that offensive attack? You brought in Mike Yurcich to much fanfare and not getting it done in terms of just putting the points up. I mean, you look at the past guys that have been here and they've all put up better points per game numbers. And, you know, you could talk about execution and the run game and all that kind of stuff, but those points eventually fell into place for those other guys. And they have not, for Mike Yurcich. That's a really, really tough thing to look at this offensive, personnel and say, why aren't they not getting it done? And really, just if we're sticking to the micro here with Michigan, you're looking at an offense that just cannot finish, struggles to finish, taking 3 points far too often, finding themselves in a position where they have to fake a punt and fake a field goal in the same quarter, because they feel that that's the way to be more aggressive, to beat a Michigan team. And Franklin even said that afterward. He said they called the game in a manner that they thought they may have to steal a couple, basically. And that's worrisome, where you've got an offense or you've got a team that was at one point in the top five, and you're worried about stealing possessions. You're worried about stealing points, with passes to your punter, essentially,
right,
the kicker. So,
right.
So that's really tough to, stomach. I mean, you look at the numbers in the first half and, pull them up right here, and Penn State lost its opportunity right here. I mean, the first quarter outgained Michigan 145-15, and that includes 18 yards lost on the fake field goal. They ran 33 plays to Michigan 6, and they got 3 points out of it. I mean, that's it right there. And you look at what Michigan has done this year, and it's kind of the reverse Michigan, besides some Michigan writers, is they go out and they've dominated the first quarter, the first half, and just haven't been able to push points across the line, whether it be three or six or whatever have you. But to have that much of a one-sided first quarter and turn it into a 3-0 lead at the end of the first quarter, that's tough to stomach. And then Michigan, of course, spun it in the second quarter, basically did the exact opposite, got 11 and a half minutes of possession in the second quarter, really dictated how things were going. I thought Haskins was fantastic, 31 carries for 156 yards, tough carries. And it wasn't like he was gashing them like Chase Brown for Illinois. His longest carry today,
man.
Yeah, his longest carry today was 17 yards, and that's saying something. He averaged 5 yards a carry, and there were plenty of carries where he didn't go anywhere, to the defense's credit. But at the same time, you know, what does James Franklin, what has he said 10 times this year? Be able to run the ball when everybody in the building knows that you're going to run the ball. Michigan was able to do that. They closed out the game because of it. And Penn State was not able to do what they needed to do to put themselves in position to do that.
And he also talked about being able to protect your quarterback when everyone knows that you need to, that it's a passing down situation. They couldn't really do either of those effectively today. And you mentioned Michigan's success with Haskins and the way he was finishing runs. I'll tell you what, it was everything that they have lacked for Penn State. It was total juxtaposition of what we have seen, because it felt like he was squeezing somehow an extra yard and a half out of every run. We kind of talked about Noah Kane in this light in 2019, but he was lowering his shoulder, not risking ball security, but it felt like he was always, you know, half of his body was landing forward and he was picking up these yards where what you thought might be a third and three, third and four was a third and one. And usually it was him, a couple fourth down and short conversions. They did stop one of them, but as the game wore on, especially at the end, just too much. And like I said, a battle of attrition that Penn State was not ready to win today. And Sean, when you talk about that first quarter, that was exactly what happened. A lot of trips into Michigan territory and very few points to show for them. Six possessions for Penn State reached Michigan territory. Another reached the 50-yard line. And yet we're talking about two field goals, a touchdown, and that two-point conversion. And 28 minutes, they produced 6 points. They had a 100-second burst there in the fourth quarter where they had 11 points, Sean. And Arnold Ebiketie had the forced fumble. The other 28 minutes of this game, and it was a very evenly contested game in time of possession. I thought this was going to be a ball control game for the Wolverines. To Penn State credit, it was not. But regardless, they could not produce points off that. And that was a surprise to me. I thought if you had told me the time of possession would essentially be even, I would have said I really like Penn State's opportunities in this game, but just could not come up with a big plays. And McNamara had the protection of a running game, and Penn State hasn't been able to really get after the quarterback with a high level of consistency. It's really been in many ways a one-man show with Arnold Ebiketie, and it was again today, two sacks and the forced fumble, and he's been such an outstanding pickup for Penn State. But in McNamara's case, that was the only time that he was really rocked. There were a couple of close calls. Penn State did get Jesse Luketta back. He was playing Mike linebacker. He was playing defensive end. He was flying around the field, was big to get him back, but wasn't that pass rush presence. So I thought that was the difference here, where McNamara was able to settle into this game and get more comfortable as things went on and react to the Penn State defense. Sean Clifford played his best football in that first quarter, and those hits took a toll. There was the seven sacks, but there were other hits, and series by series, he was getting to the sideline slower. And unfortunately, like I said, we saw our best version of Sean Clifford in the first quarter. And that is as good as we have seen Sean Clifford, by the way, since the first half at Iowa.
From a movement standpoint, absolutely. Yes. I mean, you won't believe it. Penn State ran the ball better than Michigan. And that's you take sacks out of it, of course, and that's how they're adjusted in there. 153 yards on the ground, and that includes Jordan Stout's minus 18 yards to 158 without sacks for Michigan. That's 4.1 yards per carry for Michigan, 4.4 yards for Penn State. So a slight advantage there, but given what we expected coming into the game, that's much better than we thought Penn State would handle it. And that's kind of why it was interesting to hear James Franklin talk about the run game three or four times in the post game, because it was fine. It wasn't great. It was fine. Keyvon Lee, 4.4 yards per carry, 20 carries, 88 yards, was ripping up chunks there from time to time. And it's amazing how low the bar is for Penn State's ground game right now, where we're talking chunks or 10 yard carries or something like that. As I said, John Leavitt, I mean, I don't know, man. It's just three drops, not in the position that he needed to be in to be the guy that makes the plays. He got the start today, four carries, 17 yards, including a 10 yard run. So his touches, very minimal. He had a 4 yard catch as well. It's really tough to generate any sort of confidence in any of those guys. I mean, Lee was once again good, but you know, he's not the fastest guy out there. He's going to grind you out some yards and he's going to do a decent job of what he does, but you're just lacking something else there. And that's really unfortunate. Now, going back to our question from last week, I mean, he was decidedly better than those other guys. Noah Kane got in there for a couple of plays when Lee got banged up there at the end. But other than that, we didn't really see him at all. And Devin Ford maybe played a couple of snaps in his return here. So yeah. Lee, far and away the most productive guy, but still that bar is pretty low. Going back to what you said in your previous answer, just lacks this team just lacks any sort of complementary momentum. I mean, you're not having an offense feed off a defense and vice versa. I mean, you think of last week against Maryland, you got the pick six. Well, the defense put those points on the board themselves. Today, you get a strip sack in prime field position. You just get three out of it. And that's you kind of thought the game had turned on its head at that point. And then all of a sudden, Michigan comes back and gets the strike, sucks the air out of the entire building. And that's kind of where you set, going back and forth. So, complimentary football is huge. Penn State doesn't play a whole bunch of it, but complimentary momentum is not something you think about very often. It's very hard to come by for Penn State these days.
Lee had 88 yards on those 20 carries and he was not available there at the goal line. And you're thinking, man, he led the charge in a lot of ways for them to get down, trying to tie the game. And they brought in Devin Ford. You're thinking, wow, fourth down and goal fourth with and Devin goal. Ford yeah. on the field, like we all thought it would be. And it was a in heck of a pass. I mean, a heck of a catch. I mean, the pass was there, but Tyler Warren made the catch of his career to this point. And he hasn't had a bunch of them, but this was a big moment for him pulling that one down. That's the kind of catch that Pat Freiermuth made here for a few years. Such a quality end zone target, just able to box out defenders and bring that ball in. Saw a little bit of that from Tyler Warren. And then same area of the end zone, Clifford looks in the direction of his top target, Jahan Dotson. And although this is not the game where you talk about the highlight reel for Jahan Dotson again, he had some tremendously clutch catches that Clifford took full advantage of having him on the field. A couple on fourth down, a third and long gain. All these in the second half of the game, in the fourth quarter during that drive, and unfortunately not available for that final play. As you said, NCAA rule dictates that whether Penn State had called a timeout or not at the end there, Jahan Dotson needed to be sidelined for one play of action. So they needed to pick up a first down without him on the field. The play calling was certainly questionable, but you can't question the personnel decision to not have Dotson on the field. 9 catches, 61 yards. I did, and I told you this when we were walking back to the press box after the post-game press conference, little surprised that James Franklin took this moment to call out a lack of explosive plays around Jahan Dotson. He said, you know, aside from Jahan Dotson, we're not getting enough explosive plays from this offense. And so you kind of look at what happened today. I thought Parker Washington was one of his better games of the season in terms of game-changing kind of plays. He had a 44-yard gain. He had another that went over 25. I think he ended up 4 catches, 92 yards on the day. Now, you had Theo Johnson with a 19-yard gain that got you right at the goal line. And you had some runs. I mean, look, Clifford had an 18-yard run. Keyvon Lee had a 15-yard run. John Leavitt had a 10-yard run. I know that's not qualified as explosive, but Clifford giving you 18 yards on the ground is something.
On this team, it is, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I know these numbers aren't like, oh, my gosh, it's the Saquon Barkley, Mike Gesicki, Deshaun Hamilton, McSorley version. No, I'm not saying that. But where the standard is right now for this offense and what you're getting out of the explosive plays and alongside Jahan Dotson – just, it felt like a strange game for Franklin to go vocal on that, because I look at this and I think, well, Parker Washington made a bunch of explosive plays. Theo Johnson made an explosive play. And you had a couple in the ground game, which has been missing. So I understand the frustration, but I thought it was a strange time to go there after this one.
Maybe a strange time, but I mean, he's not wrong. You look at what Penn State has done this season, and you look at this box score and it kind of lines up. Longest play of the day, a 44-yard catch and run by Parker Washington. That wasn't a touchdown. I mean, they're not scoring long touchdown.
The running game. It's the running game. Because he kept attaching the running game. And, you know, let's be real. His comments weren't really about those wide receivers, because they've had big plays from the wide receivers. And if you were counting on Cam Sullivan Brown to come up with one right now and near the end of his fifth year, that's on you. But this is the ground game. I mean, it's the ground we're talking about. Wow, look,
yes,
yeah, that's on them. That, and by you, I meant James Franklin in this situation. But 15 yards, I'm like raving about a 15-yard gain from Kevon Lee, and I'm pointing out a 10-yard gain from Kevon from John Lovett. And what did J1 Slater say a couple weeks ago? They used to have some of these explosive plays in a single game, exceeding what they had for the first eight games of this season. It is just such a steep drop. And man, that's why I thought when Clifford's going out there and he's picking up 18 yards early and he's moving the chains with his legs a couple different times and he's being aggressive, I think, okay, if that can sustain for four quarters, Penn State's probably going to win this game. He took his shots, you know, said on the pregame show, they might get to the finish line with a win if Sean Clifford plays that way, but he's going to be battered. They didn't get to the finish line with a win. It didn't hold up for him as a runner, and he still got battered. And you can't be that reliant on Sean Clifford to be your everything. And that wasn't supposed to be the plan when we talked about Penn State going into the season, and game after game after game, it clearly has to be. He has to be sparking big plays in the passing game, certainly with help from his wide receivers, or he has to be producing big plays on the ground, because you look around him and the backfield's giving you nothing. And Penn State, year after year, regardless of the offensive coordinator, they have gotten big plays game after game. Who be it? I mean, Ricky Slade had moments for this team where he went off. No one's done it. And it's just, you just wonder how it's even possible through 10 games where that moment hasn't come for someone. I mean, even accidentally stumbling your way into some kind of huge moment where you're running for 160 yards in a matchup, it's not happening regardless of who the opponent is. And it's just something needs to be answered for. And that I think is really the undeniable focus here now for the fans, for James Franklin, is why are you so poor at running the football, and how can you possibly take it from this to a major pendulum swing? Because it can't just be marked improvement, Sean. It needs to be a revamp of whatever you're doing right now, because you want to compete for Big Ten titles. This is the path of most resistance if you want to try to do it without a ground game to lean on.
Well, it's the ground game, but it just goes back to points, and they're not getting that. They're not getting close to that. And, you know, there are weeks when Purdue can put up 40 some points, or I'm not going to say Iowa, but what, you know, Wisconsin has scored some points in the last couple of weeks. Rutgers scored 38 points today. I don't know how they got them all against Indiana, but these teams are scoring points. I mean, you can laugh and joke about the style of play in the Big Ten, but the points per game are fairly similar to some of these others. Big time schools around the country. So at the end of the day, if you're not putting points up, and that, as we've seen in this this James Franklin era, no matter who the offense coordinator is, they come from big plays, they come from splash plays. And if you can't have that, you need something to fall back on to be consistent. Because let's be honest, moving the football was not the issue today. Penn State put up 332 yards, Michigan had 361, so fairly similar. You know, you take some of the sack yardage out of there and the fake field goal stuff. But yeah, Penn State feels it needs to do something to counterbalance its own offense, and that's a problem in itself.
They don't trust their offense. They don't trust their ability to pick up yards on third and shorts and fourth and shorts and fourth and goals and third and goals. And when you don't trust yourself, you end up, again, 43 passes today for Sean Clifford in a very tight game. McNamara threw 29. A lot of dropbacks for Clifford against a defense like this, with edge rushers like this. That's a lot of dropbacks. And again, without that safety net of a run game, man, that 43 – And I said, now three games here, Sean, last three games for Clifford, he's almost to 140 pass attempts in the last three games.
Yeah, and we know that's what it's going to be when you don't have a run game. I mean, you're going to lean, we call that balance this week, where go with what's making you successful and then just lean on that, and that'll be your balance. But it's tough to comprehend how they've gotten here, just in terms of the offensive line is nowhere near what they made it out to be in the preseason. You know, you're struggling all over the place. Mike Miranda, by the way, left after that fake field goal, did not come back. So there was some movement in there. Juice Scruggs went to center. Bryce Hefner came in at left guard. Pretty much the same results. You did run the ball a little bit better, but at the same time, I mean, there's no quick fix on that offensive line, as you can see. Beyond that, you're searching for the explosion, and it's not there. It almost looks like you're trying to put yourself in a position to outcoach the other side and being too creative in the process. We saw a lot of those middle screens today that just did not work at all. We saw a lot of things where you just get away from it, and all of a sudden you're sitting at third and eight instead of third and four or something like that. So I feel like there's probably a little bit of overcompensation going on with the coaches, with the players and things like that. And when you're not executing, you're not hitting your throws, you're not putting your guys in the right spot to be there, you're going to get dysfunction, and that's what it is right now.
I know no one wants to see a full season of Will Levis versus Rutgers 2020, but here's how the rushing stats line up from last year to this year. And they fired their offensive coordinator after last year, and they brought in Mike Yurcich. And we've seen a nice turnaround with Sean Clifford, but what an absolute tank job right now when you look about the effectiveness of this ground game. Last year in the nine games, despite all the struggles and all the losses early, Penn State went 100-plus rushing yards in six of those games. They went over 240 yards rushing in five of those games. This year, they've gone over 100 rushing yards three times in 10 games. They went for 109 today. They've maxed out against Power 5 opponents with 209 versus Indiana. I mean, it's a cliff, and then you just make that whistle sound of an anvil dropping.
I thought you would actually give us the
sound effects. I don't trust my whistle enough to try it here. No,
I don't blame you. Don't blame me at all. Yeah. I mean, it's tough to see them, it's tough to talk about every week. We keep saying the same thing over and over again.
We've been covering these running backs since they were in high school. They all thought they were going to come here, be awesome for 3 years and go to the NFL. That's the plan when you come to a school like Penn State, and the guys who were here before did what they did, and you're coming to play for Jawan Sider, and this is what Penn State's supposed to be. And then you rip that kind of identity away from this team, and we're all trying to wonder how we're supposed to talk about the subject and where exactly the mojo has gone for that running back room. And of course, we have to make sure we apply that conversation to the offensive line and the inability to gain any kind of a push in really any of these matchups definitively, whether we're talking about a Power 5 opponent or an FBS opponent or an FCS opponent this season. It's 10 for 10 really on Penn State just not being the clearly more physical team at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, insanity. The definition of insanity is recording the same post-game podcast over and over again. It seems like
feels like last year again. There. Oh no!
Although we didn't get to talk about fake field goals from the holder to the punter on previous episodes. So thanks for a little bit of fresh material. That one I don't like. The call schematically. Okay. I mean, Jordan Stout's a really athletic kicker, but at the same time, it's not getting done. If you don't have the trust in your offense, and James Franklin said this afterward, that everybody knows they're not good at short yardage. Well, if you don't have the trust in your offense to get 2 yards or to take a shot and give, even if it doesn't work, have Michigan take over at the 2 yard line. Okay. Everybody will take that, but then you go out, you run a seconds fake, and maybe it's one of those things where I just mentioned you look like you're trying to outcoach somebody, outsmart somebody, and they won't possibly do it again. You know, after the fake punt on the first drive, which was really, a really well executed play, and then you turn it around and you make Jordan Stout catch a ball from Rafcheka that's thrown behind him, and it's just it's a waterfall from there, and that's how you lose opportunities, and that's how you lose ball games.
What else do we have to talk about here, Mr. Fitz?
I hope like not much more.
I put together a rundown like I always do, and then we always just obliterate that.
We usually have a clock in the upper right-hand corner, and we have to record on Zoom today, and we don't have that clock, so it could be anywhere. I'm not sure how long we've been talking.
Whatever leftovers we do have, we will get to them on Monday. I do want to just say big picture stuff real quick coming out of this third top 10 opponent in 5 weeks for Penn State. Obviously, they 0-3 in those matchups. They've got another coming up November 27th with Michigan State in East Lansing. Rutgers coming to town at 5-5 to face the 6-4 Penn State squad. Get ready for a weird senior week and get ready for a lot of weird bowl talk with bowls that you may not have known existed until Penn State plays in them this December.
Yeah, the Big Ten's got a Vegas bowl again, so I think everybody's looking to that one. it's tough because you say three top 10 opponents in 5 weeks, and you've been in the game or in control of certain segments of those games. Now, let's be honest. I don't think Iowa's a top 10 team. I don't think Michigan's a top 10 team. I think Ohio State's probably, you know, from a traditional ranking standpoint, not as good as they've been in the past. That's college football these days. You got Georgia, you got Alabama, you got everybody else. And you can even find people to argue the Alabama side of it. That's frustrating because you've been close. But as I said, you keep getting close, you keep falling short, and that's an issue.
They led in the fourth quarter against Michigan. They led in the fourth quarter against Iowa. And against Ohio State, it was a three-point deficit in the fourth quarter for Penn State. End of the day,
I knew I could count on you to bring me those stats to just jam it further in people's eyeballs.
Yeah, just to reinforce. Yeah.
We're not on YouTube this week. Yeah.
For those of us who do join us for these, some call them therapy sessions, we do appreciate it. We know that some of you just skip right over this. For those of you, you're not hearing us now, but we'll talk to you for Rutgers week. Penn State dropping to 6-4, 4 out of 5 games now on the wrong side of the scoreboard. Rutgers, Michigan State, bowl game to be determined, and that's a wrap on this 2021 season, which has changed so tremendously in just the last month plus. Sean, good work out of you. We'll talk again on Monday. Thanks to all of our listeners. I'm Tyler Donahue. As always, this is the Lions 24/7 podcast.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.